Can food be immoral? What do I mean by that? Most people classify the Torah's laws into one of three categories: moral laws, ritual laws, or civil laws. And the whole issue of food doesn't seem to be related to morality at all, and laws regarding food would fall into the category of ritual laws. And if you've been raised in the church, then all of this probably doesn't even matter anyway, because you've been taught that the Torah's dietary laws have run their course, have been repealed by Yeshua in the apostolic scriptures. But what if there's something we're missing, and there's a moral element to the Torah's laws surrounding food? Have I got your attention? Then stick around with me for this week's 5-Minute Torah. Shalom and blessings from Shalom Macon, the place where disciples of Yeshua learn, connect, and grow. I'm Darren, and before I get into the 5 minutes of my 5-Minute Torah commentary, let's cover a few quick facts about this week's Torah portion. This week we are in the 25th Torah portion and the second portion of the book of Leviticus. We're studying the portion of Tzav, Leviticus 6:1 through 8:36, and here are the three things that you need to know about it. Number one, temple garbage collection, sanctity in the ashes. Every morning before the service of the Holy Temple could officially begin, the ashes from the sacrifices that remained on the altar all night had to be removed to make way for the meat of the new sacrifices. The beginning of our Torah portion details the responsibilities of the priests who were assigned the duty of removing these ashes from the altar early in the morning. From all appearances, it would seem this task would simply be that of a glorified garbage collector. But this task was a sacred duty and highly sought after by the priesthood. The Talmud even records that once it was time to perform the cleaning, there was a race among the Kohanim who would get to do the job. It even led to an incident where one priest was pushed off the ramp and ended up breaking his leg. From that point forward, a type of lottery was created to decide which of the Kohanim would get the duty. Why all the fuss? Because even the ashes of the temple were holy, and being a trash collector in the Lord's house is an extreme honor. Number two, Torah kosher, laws on blood and fat. When most people look into the Torah's dietary regulations, they automatically think it's all found in next week's Torah portion in Leviticus 11. However, the dietary laws are actually scattered throughout the Torah. Our current Torah portion contains additional information detailing the prohibitions on consuming blood and certain types of fat. We read, "The Lord spoke to Moses saying, 'Speak to the people of Israel, saying, you shall eat no fat of ox or sheep or goat. The fat of an animal that dies of itself and the fat of one that is torn by beasts may be put to any other use, but on no account shall you eat it. For every person who eats of the fat of an animal of which a food offering may be made to the Lord shall be cut off from his people. Moreover, you shall eat no blood whatsoever, whether of fowl or of animal, in any of your dwelling places. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people.'" This is Leviticus 6:22-27. As we can see by this, it wasn't just the type of animal that the Lord was concerned with when he gave these laws, but everything about them, particularly restricting the consumption of the organ fats or the blood that belonged to him. And number three, anointing the priests, the sacred inauguration. Our Torah portion concludes with the ceremony to inaugurate Aaron and his sons into the service of the Lord. Aaron took a mikvah, a type of baptism, and then was dressed in the holy vestments. Moses took the oil of anointing and used it first to consecrate the tabernacle and its furnishings. Then he used it to consecrate Aaron. This process was repeated for Aaron's sons. After this, Moses brought a bull before Aaron. Aaron laid his hands on it and invested his identity into it as a sin offering. After it was slaughtered, Moses took the blood and anointed the altar with it. The organs were burnt on the altar, but the hide, the meat, and the dung were taken outside of the camp and burned. This was followed by the sacrifice of two rams, one as a whole burnt offering and the other as a, quote, ram of ordination, signifying the ordination of Aaron and his sons. Moses took some of its blood and sprinkled Aaron and his sons and their garments with it. With this, they were ready for the service of the Lord. Are you a disciple of Yeshua? There are a lot of people who say they are, but when it comes down to it, they really don't even know what it means to be a disciple. Why? Because discipleship is a concept unique to Judaism. It's an intimate relationship between a rabbi and his student. Yeshua called 12 men to be in his inner circle of discipleship, and those 12 men changed the world. What did they know about being a disciple that we don't? I wrestled with this question when I wrote my book, The Four Responsibilities of a Disciple. There were a ton of books already written on how to make disciples, but I wanted to know what it meant to be a disciple, because it seems that all of these disciples that were being made in our day really weren't having an impact on the world around them like they should. I found out that there were four responsibilities every disciple should know, and that when implemented, living out these four responsibilities has the potential to change the world. If you want to know what it means to be a true disciple of our Master Yeshua, then check out my book, The Four Responsibilities of a Disciple, using the link below. This week's Torah commentary is called Can Food Be Immoral? And comes from my book, 5-Minute Torah, Volume 3. Sometimes to our modern minds, the Torah's instructions can seem irrelevant, primitive, or even savage. Take this week's Torah reading, for example. The first few chapters continue on about the various ritual sacrifices that our previous portion described. In chapter 7, we learn that the meat from certain sacrifices may not be left over after a certain amount of time. The meat of some sacrifices must be eaten before the next morning, but others may be extended until the following evening. Eating this meat after the prescribed time is a sin. He who offers it shall not be accepted, neither shall it be credited to him. It is tainted, and he who eats of it shall bear his iniquity. Leviticus 7:18. Seriously? Eating meat after a specified time period is a sin? This seems unreasonable to most people today. It isn't logical, nor are the prohibitions against eating certain other things. The consequences of eating these certain other things, however, seem even more extreme. But the person who eats of the flesh of the sacrifice of the Lord's peace offerings, while an uncleanness is upon him, that person shall be cut off from his people. Leviticus 7:20. For every person who eats of the fat of an animal of which a food offering may be made to the Lord shall be cut off from his people. Leviticus 7:25. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. Leviticus 7:27. Do these seem a little harsh? If we look back at the creation account and the Garden of Eden, we actually find a somewhat parallel event. Adam and Eve were given all of the food from the entire garden but a single item. They were forbidden to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When they ate this forbidden delicacy, they were cut off. How difficult of a commandment is it to not eat from a single tree out of thousands? Yet this is the struggle of humanity. We spurn what we have been given and long for what is beyond our grasp. In our day and age, we tend to think that God is not concerned about rituals and observances, but only about overarching principles and moral issues. But if God is not concerned with even the smallest details, is he really the God that holds the universe together? A God who is not concerned with the most intimate details is a God who's disconnected from his creation. Many people think in these terms because of the way they view the apostolic scriptures or the New Testament. They believe that Yeshua came to replace the legalistic religion of Judaism with a new grace-centered one. Therefore, according to this opinion, grace and truth have superseded ritual and observance. We have to remember, though, that the apostolic scriptures were not written in a vacuum. Contrary to what many well-intending pastors claim, the teachings of the New Testament were not created in a vacuum. The teachings of Yeshua and the apostles were mined and forged from the Hebrew scriptures. Yeshua wasn't a demigod of Greek mythology. He didn't have to spend his life repairing the mistakes of an immortal but fallible father, like many would believe. He carried on the work of his father by upholding the Torah, teaching its proper application, and living it out as an example for his disciples. You may ask, what about all of the harsh things in the Hebrew scriptures, the Old Testament? Why don't we see those things in the New Testament? Well, even within the apostolic scriptures, we have the example of the severity of God when he struck down Ananias and Sapphira for simply stretching the truth a little bit to Peter. See Acts 5. And when he struck down Herod and he was eaten by worms. Acts 12. We can see from this that God does not change. Many people believe ritual and morality to be completely unrelated to one another. However, God is the one who commanded both. Since morality is a set of values that determines what is right and what is wrong, we have to broaden our understanding of what this means. It's not simply ethical behavior, which changes according to our environment. From a biblical perspective, everything in life falls into the category of a moral code, including ritual. We can choose to do things the way God tells us, or we can choose not to. God's instructions define morality. We can act morally or immorally. Well, what about the cases we talked about previously? Can food be immoral? It definitely can if God said not to eat it. Therefore, our morality should be subject to His and not the other way around. Are there any areas of your life that you're not letting God's values become your values? Well, you may be thinking, didn't God give Peter a vision telling him that he was repealing the dietary laws? Well, if you're wondering how this factors into the equation, then be sure to check out my commentary on the Torah portion of McCates called Holy Ham and Cheese. Just click on the link right here to check it out.